Hello, and welcome to Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and my guest this month is, you may know her as a local blues singer, Lex Gray from Catskill. She's also a folklorist and archivist of old music.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is a thrill.
My pleasure.
I love to share some of my passions with our listening audience, especially if you guys are history buffs out there.
Yes.
Because I like to dig up kind of the... Well, the darker side of history, not the kind that you'd see in a regular textbook. And Catskill is not only an amazing, beautiful place to live and to visit, but it's also really rich in history. And what really fascinated me is when I first moved to the village, I had an elderly neighbor who lived across the street. Unfortunately, she's passed now, and she came over. And she said, you know, I want to tell you about the well that used to be in your yard. There, you know, everything is covered over now, and we have public water, and we don't need the well. But she was telling me casually how when she was a little girl, she'd go fetch water from the well and how delicious the water was. And sometimes you'd run into a railroad tramp. And I just froze. I was like, excuse me? And she said, oh, yeah, there was a tramp camp right across the tracks, which are now the CSX tracks, but used to be the West Shore line of the Catskill Railroad. And she just pointed casually right over to, like, where I live, like, right across the tracks and said, oh, yeah, the hobos had a tramp camp there. And they'd come out after jumping off the train, because the train station was right across the Catskill Creek where now Haynes Tire is. And so I asked this woman to elaborate about this tramp camp, and she said that she remembers as a little girl that they would have big parties. They would have hootenannies, she would call them, and she would hear banjos and singing, and there'd be a big fire. I mean, just like the iconic vision you would have of the kettle. And she said the hobos, or tramps as they were called, would politely go through the village to the nicer appointed homes and knock on the door and first offer their services if they needed any work done. And if they said no, they said, well, can you just give me something to eat, you know, kind of like the stone soup.
Yeah, I know.
Guess if you got to enough houses and got enough stuff, you'd have quite a feast. And there is some stuff in history, and I've been researching that, where they would steal chickens or eggs, you know, and there are some interesting little tidbits from the newspaper. I have one really funny one right here.
Okay.
Let's see. I'm looking. Just give me a moment.
All right.
Is there? Yeah.
It's doing all right.
Yeah, there's a couple of really interesting. I was looking through, you know, the Vetter Library, if anybody is interested in history, not only does the genealogy, and you can look up your family history, but also you can peruse any publication that was published in Catskill. All the newspapers are bound beautifully, and if you're careful, they'll take them out and let you look through things. So I was looking for some evidence of vagrants, hobos, tramps being in Catskill, because it's only folklore until you can back it up with some sort of historical fact.
True.
You know, stories, and as stories go from person to person and generation to generation, the story can change quite significantly.
Yes, it can.
So, four vagrants ordered from town by judge. Believing tramps were responsible for the thefts of her chickens last week, Mrs. George A. Pawson of West Bridge Street called the police. Captain George H. Klein, Sergeant Harry T. Du Bois, and Officer Donald Cairns responded, and after a search, discovered four men finishing a meal near the railroad tracks.
Let me get some chicken dinner.
No evidence of chicken was found, however, but the men were arrested for vagrancy, to which they pleaded guilty. Judge Harold B. Plattner gave them suspended sentences and invited them to leave town. So there is evidence of vagrants, and six men arrested for hooking railroad rides. Those who try to ride the rails through Catskill get caught as often as they escape. Six men attempted it last week and fell into the hands of Sergeant Everett W. Schoonmaker of the Railroad Police. They were brought before Justice Plattner and received varying sentences. So, these clips were from the Depression era.
Okay.
So, interesting factoids. Just, you know, I was also offered at the Vetter to look through the crime blotter. And, you know, so whenever somebody was taken in, they would write down their name and their age and their profession, if any, and what the offense was, and then, you know, what the sentence was. And there's definitely a lot of disorderly conduct. There was a lot of driving intoxicated. There was a lot of public intoxication, 22 per week on average, in fact. Then there's some petty larceny and stuff and some juvies. Vagrancy only seemed to be 4 to 6 a week. And then tramps is listed. I don't know the difference between vagrancy and tramps. I guess, you know, yeah.
I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, right? No. I mean, so, and there was up to 6 or 7 tramps per week being booked. So we definitely had some vagrant action happening.
Oh yeah.
And so this story and this whole vision of this hootenanny going on right across the tracks from my home, and also just being somebody very into the blues and trains and riding boxcars, mm-hmm. is very much part of, you know, that romance of that. And my band and I wrote a song called Hobo Soup. And I'd love to give your listening audience a little sample of that. And this song appears on the Heal My Soul album, released about 3 years ago and recorded entirely in the village of Catskill. Yes. So we were basically looking at the tram camp as we recorded this song. And you can also check out the video, Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers. The video is called Hobo Soup. And if you Google that, it should come right up. And what's funny is when I was researching the Catskill train history, I just said Catskill train hobos, and the video came up as part of the search. So
perfect.
So it's getting to be part of the historical thread now. So I request that everybody check it out. And it was shot semi-legally on the CSX tracks. I think we scared the heck out of some of the workers when they saw people dressed as 20s hobos
walking
around the tracks. I think they probably thought they were seeing ghosts. So if you will, here is Hobo Soup from Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers. Enjoy.
Okay, I'll have a listen.
Catskill mountain town, the freight train makes its lonesome sound. The railroad hobos hang around, setting up the tram campgrounds. They come a knocking on all the village doors to beg a little scrap or something more. If I had an old potato or a little bone, this lonely, hungry hobo might eat more than a stone. If we get together and brought what we got, everybody working to fill the pot. From the mountains of the country to the urban stew, everybody needs a little hobo soup. From the rooftop of the city to the chicken coop, everybody needs a little hobo soup. Everybody needs a little hobo soup. Woo-hoo. I got a little bunch of onions, got a bulb of garlic too, a flask of whiskey, I'm gonna share it with you. If I had an old potato or a little bone, this lonely, hungry hobo might eat more than a stone. If we get together and brought what we got, everybody working to fill the pot. From the mountains of the country to the urban stew, everybody needs a little hobo soup. From the rooftop of the city to the chicken coop, everybody needs a little hobo soup. Everybody needs
Okay, well, everyone, I hope you've enjoyed listening to Hobo Soup. And now, to wrap up this first segment of Backtracks this month, we're going to talk about a little of some statistics. I love saying that word. statistics of the Depression era in Catskill and Greene County.
Well,
Lex?
One of the periods of time that fascinate me is Prohibition and the Depression era. Because, you know, well, it was action-packed, and there was a lot of things going on. And there was a very interesting connection between Greene County and New York City, particularly Catskill and, like, Brooklyn and Lower Manhattan, because, let's just be straight. A lot of the booze was made up here and brought down the Hudson to the city for the imbibers during Prohibition.
Make it in the country, huh?
Yeah, and what I find really interesting from researching at the Vetter Library, just looking through the newspapers from 1932 to like 1934, just, mm-hmm. you know, in that little zone. Well, first of all, it was really interesting that there was a lot of ads about how the farmers were becoming distressed because there was very little milk consumption happening all of a sudden in Greene County, that the desire for milk had gone down incredibly. And you see these little public service ads, you know, drink milk. It's very good for mm-hmm. you. It's economical. It's full of protein and, you know, they were also commenting on how the ice houses were not really kicking out as much ice as they should, and some of them were burning down. Yeah. And the connection has been made now because what was going on is instead of making ice in those ice houses, they were making giant amounts of bootleg whiskey. And I have a couple of little clips here. Let's find this wonderful clip. Ah, largest still ever found unearthed here. And this was a still in New Baltimore, where the old ice house was, that held 180,000 gallons. So it certainly was a good time.
I guess so.
and there's another little factoid. The ice house, the Pine Grove Ice House at 4 Mile Point, formerly owned by the Knickerbocker Ice Company, was burned to the ground Wednesday night. The cause of the fire was not discovered. The house had been rented by the Cayuga Salt Company, and a few months ago, a huge alcohol still was uncovered there by federal men. So, obviously, there were some employment opportunities here if you were a bootlegger. And I also unearthed some very interesting employment statistics in Greene County itself. So they revealed these statistics, I guess, because they wanted to get some grant money, you know, mm-hmm. I guess proportionate to the unemployment. Right. There would be some sort of appropriation to help aid people. So in the town of Ashland, 20 unemployed. In the town of Athens, 100 unemployed. In the town of Cairo, 10. Coxsackie, 50. Durham, 25. Greenville, 25. Halkett, 16. Hunter, 125.
Wow.
Jewett, 35. Lexington, 35. New Baltimore, 40. Prattsville, 30. Wyndham, 20. And wait for it, Catskill.
Okay.
300.
Oh. Wow. So, I was shocked with Hunter. I was saying, I wonder how they got so high. And then Catskill's over twice as much.
300. So that's just, I mean, that's a wacky statistic right there.
And I'm just
curious, you know, if anybody has any thoughts on that. I mean, maybe more people actually admitted to being unemployed.
Yeah.
Or maybe there were more people in the workforce that were no longer in the workforce.
Right.
You know, it's hard to gauge. But, you know, I just thought that was super interesting.
Yes.
So, you know, and vagrancy was kind of a big deal here. And like I said, the difference between hobos and vagrancy, I'm not sure. But I do have a very interesting snippet about, and a lot of women seem to be getting taken in for vagrancy. And, you know, it's a question mark to me whether they mean something else like solicitation, but it doesn't mention that. And this says an ACRA woman arrested on vagrancy charge. And I will name names, but, you know, it was 1933. If you're related to this person, please come forward. I'd love the whole story. Rose Richmond, age 21, of ACRA, was placed in the women's ward of the Greene County Jail, where she was held on a technical charge of vagrancy. Sergeant Wheeler was notified and made the arrest, taking the woman before Justice William Weber of Caro. Henry W. Barker, Greene County Public Welfare Commissioner, will investigate the case. The woman is said to have wandered about the country scantily clad at times.
And we were talking before, we wondered what that scantily clad was in the 1930s.
Right? I mean,
it
could be just maybe your arms were showing or your ankles. I mean, I mean, now we can go to the Walmart in our pajamas and we wouldn't be scantily clad.
No.
So I just thought that was interesting, too. So there's sometimes these historical snippets open up more questions than they do answer questions.
Right.
I just want to throw a little something out there. Okay. This is my passion, and I am doing an oral history project starting based in the village of Catskill. So if you have a story to tell, I would love to give you my email, and I would love it if you would reach out to me, and I'd love to be able to film you or the person you know, hopefully somebody who remembers or somebody who remembers somebody who remembers. And if you have any postcards or photos, I would just love to be able to have you tell the story and allow me to film you telling the story for the archive. It's not going to be a public broadcast or anything. It's just going to be folk tales and folklore of Catskill. And if you are interested in something like this, I would love to talk to you. My email is lexgrey911@gmail.com. And that's lexgrey911@gmail.com. Please reach out to me. I would be delighted.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lex. And we've come to the end of our first segment here. My guest today is Lex Grey, talking about local history, the dark side of history in Catskill, things that I never knew. And so we're running a little low here. I'm going to rush this. Please stay tuned for our next segment. And thank you for listening. Hello, and welcome to the second segment of Backtracks in Time for this month. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and my guest this month is Lex Grey, you may know of Catskill. You may know her as a local blues singer, maybe had the joy of seeing her perform. And she's also a local history buff. So, you can tell why we have a connection there.
Absolutely.
And I just discovered her love of local history a few weeks ago. She is a folklorist and archivist of old music, and this month will be inducted into the New York State Blues Hall of Fame. Now, as far as the local history, in our first segment, we talked about a hobo camp that was in Catskill, right near where Lex lives, actually. Not to give away your address.
Well, you're not.
I wouldn't do that.
Just take a left at the tramp camp.
There you go. You might have visitors, you know. Now we're going to talk about some history of the Catskill Creek and Austin's Glen. And,
well, this is a fascination of mine. So once again, you know, as Jack and I were talking off the record a little bit, sometimes history opens up more questions than it offers answers. So, you know, of course, we can't talk about the Catskill Creek at all without talking about our great American legacy of painters and how the village of Catskill was the epicenter of the revival of landscape painting in America. And of course, that was a backlash to the Industrial Revolution. And there's an amazing little segment, and you can see it if you go down to the Mauganock beneath Jefferson Heights. And I don't know if you're a hiker and you haven't discovered this beautiful trail on Snake Road, get yourselves down there because it is a beautiful vista of the creek. It's an amazing untouched native environment. You know, it's a bog. You know, it's funny. The word embuff in Dutch means bog.
I'm always learning tidbits doing this show.
Yeah, when on tour in Holland, I heard that word a lot. And then I came here, I'm like, embuff, oh, bog. Yeah, it is a bog. So, and it's just amazing as far as its wildlife, its bird life, its plant life, its peace and quiet. And the old railroad berm for the, first it was the railroad that took the bricks from the brick factories to the point to get onto a freighter and be taken to Manhattan to build our great New York City.
Yes.
And I'm sure some of the bricks stayed here, too.
Oh, yeah.
And another little funny factoid is part of the creek has been dredged out. And when the tide is low, you can see where they would let the barges through so they can bring the bricks all the way to the point. Oh, so that is dredged out. And that's why that what I thought was a natural kind of staircase almost in there is actually was probably blasted out, like right out of the creek. And Frederick Church, or no, I'm sorry, Thomas Cole has a quote. I know they're kind of almost interchangeable, even though they're not teacher and student, you know. And but he has a great quote that actually is in the glass display case at the trailhead about how incensed he was that they were destroying this beautiful place to put a railroad in, and how, you know, the trees were coming down and the tracks were coming in, and how he felt like they were, you know, pardon the expression, but raping his beautiful land by doing such a thing. And the trail does take you on that railroad berm. So before it was a tourist train, it was an industry train, slightly smaller scale. And then it gave way to taking passengers to the Otis to go up to the Mountain House.
Yep, Castle Mountain Railway.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I know that you're a train person, and you love that whole vision of, I mean, just the feeling of, I mean, imagine being in your high button shoes and your, well, maybe you wouldn't be in your high button shoes and your corset.
I would,
and my hoop skirt. You would be in your top hat and very tight little wool suit.
Yes.
And imagine just, you know, going through that whole terrain and then being dropped off and getting a stagecoach up that whole mountain, or taking the Otis up the mountain. I mean, you must have been in for quite the adventure.
Yes. And sorry, by the way, people dressed. I used to volunteer at the Freight Masters Museum down at Catskill Point when it was opened. I missed that very much. But there was a picture in there of the Catskill train station 1906 on Water Street, right about where a lumberyard is now, actually. The people dressed waiting for the train over 100 years ago in suits and the ladies in the white dresses. And I'm thinking to myself, it must be hotter than blazes. You're, you know, dirt roads, a steam train, and here you're dressed in suits and white dresses.
Hey, it's not the white dress, but not for nothing, people. It was the undergarments. Have you seen some of those undergarments? Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think moving would be, sitting would be almost impossible.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's back when, you know, when corsetry was not just fashion. It was mandatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had to put that stuff in a package real tight.
Right.
So, speaking of corsetry and Victorian women.
That's a good segue.
Yeah, here's a story that I came across in the Examiner from
1897.
Yeah, I think it was 1897. There was an editorial written by a very irate Victorian man about his wife disappearing to see this American Indian medicine woman who lived in, I guess, what is now Jefferson Heights, which they did call the Indian Village. And there's a little area there called Indian Village. And back in, I guess, the day, whatever day that was, mm-hmm. That was the Indian fort where they can look over and see anybody coming by water. Okay. And I guess, you know, as our culture pushed the Indian culture away, they were fading from view. But there were still some women who practiced the ancient medicine lore. And he was writing about how his wife would see this woman, you know, a couple of times a month for her lady distress. And then all of a sudden she started coming more and more and more. And he'd find his wife gone for longer periods of time, more frequently with these lady problems. And once he put this out there, the other men in the village said, yeah, you know, my wife is going to her all the time, too. And it turns out that whatever problems these women claimed to have had, they were getting solved with this wonderful tea made from indigenous plants in the Mauganac area down by Jefferson Heights, down mm-hmm. by Snake Road. Turns out they were little tiny phosphorescent mushrooms that might or might not have psychedelic qualities. So just the thought of all these Victorian era women in their corsets and their hoop skirts and their high button shoes tripping around Catskill and saying, gee, that felt so good. I got to come back and do this again.
I love it.
So that story really captured my imagination. But the creek is just such a mysterious place, I guess, not only for its psychedelic vegetation, but also its interesting features, you know, the big stone escarpment there mm-hmm. that some claim is part of the Kindred Spirits painting, and it has just been moved. You know, if you look at the settler and the Indian shaking hands mm-hmm. on that promontory, and if you look at that promontory in the creek, it certainly is shaped very similarly. And an interesting factoid about that promontory, it has a name, and the name is the Devil's Aspect.
Ooh.
Now, I don't know why, so if I'm going to throw my email out there, and I'd love for somebody to talk to me if they have any information about this. Another thing that is really fascinating to me is the Austin's Glen. I found a postcard when I was vacationing up here before I was a full-time resident. And it was this beautiful little postcard of this Victorian idyllic couple in their high button shoes and the top mm-hmm. hat. And they're holding hands on what looks to be this beautiful beach with this little freight train kind of in the background. And it said, visit beautiful Austin's Glen. And I turned to my husband. I said, Victor, where the heck is that? And we live in Catskill and mm-hmm. we couldn't find it. And I asked around enough until somebody told me that it is below Austin Acres, and it is a geographical hotspot, if you will, full of caves, natural caves. And the beach, it seems, has washed away during Hurricane Irene, so there's been a little re-terraforming of the area. But it's one of the most beautiful and scenic areas on the creek. It is so pastoral and so glorious, and you can see the fish when the tide is gentle. You can see the fish swimming, and you can see the eagles just circling above. And I would love some stories about this place if anybody has any, because this is one of the segments I want to start my oral history project on, which is stories of the Catskill Creek. If you have one for me, Lex Gray, LexGrey, 911@gmail.com. And I eagerly await some interesting stories and some oral history. And please do tell your stories before those stories fade into oblivion. You know, soon we'll just have newspaper articles. But right. I want more than just the newspaper account. I want the personal account. And that's why I love to write songs, because a song is nothing but a story set to music. Somebody's okay. personal account of a situation. And hopefully when that situation reveals itself, we realize that we are more connected than we are separate.
Right. So. And now we have another song in this segment.
Oh, yeah, we have a song. Well, the funny thing about the editorial by the Victorian gentleman was, we need to get this, I'm trying to remember what he called her, like a scandalous squaw. He's like, you know, the medicine woman had to be chased from the village because she was such a terrible influence, and we need to get this scandalous squaw out of our environs right away. So that kind of captured my imagination, and I wrote a little tune called The Warrior Squaw. Okay. And this is for all of our Catskill Native people.
Okay, so enjoy that, and be back in a moment.
She draws mystical images. The warrior squaw, she's quick on the draw. Ancestral protection. As the rain falls
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed Warrior Squaw. And since we are a little pressed for time here in this segment, I'm going to do a quick sign-off. Thank you to Lex Gray for being my guest on this month's show. And please stay tuned for our third segment. Thank you very much, and have a great day. Hello, and welcome to our third segment of Backtracks in Time for this month. I'm Jack Sensabaugh, and my guest this month is from Catskill is Lex Gray. You may know her as a local blues singer. She's also a folklorist and archivist of old music. And incidentally, this month will be inducted into the New York State Blues Hall of Fame. So congratulations on that, Lex. And we have been talking about different history tidbits of Catskill. Most of which I have never heard. Learning some of the more of the darker ones, so to speak.
I will bring you the underbelly.
The underbelly. Yeah, thank you. See, my brain was not working.
There's the newspaper story, and then there's the story that you know your friends and your family might have.
Right.
There's many sides, there's many facets to this historical diamond.
Yes.
And we were talking in the last segment about the Catskill Creek and about Austin's Glen, which is one of, you know, there's some definite spots on the creek that have some historical significance, some washed away by time and re-terraforming.
Sure.
But I have an interesting thing that I uncovered from a 1933 Catskill newspaper. And once again, you know, this is not only I'm not only on this show to share my knowledge and my passion with people, but also to ask people to help me connect some of these dots. Now, the American Legion in 1933 had a picnic in this Austin's Glen, which once again now seems to be too washed out to hold a picnic.
Sure.
So I'm just so curious about what it actually looked like. All I have is this withered 1800s era postcard. American Legion picnic held in Austin's Glen. Legionnaires and their families, to the number of about 75, gathered in Austin's Glen on Sunday for a basket picnic held by Catskill Post number 110. Each family brought a basket running over with good things to eat, and coffee and ice cream were provided by the members of the post. Following the picnic dinner, which comprised of almost everything anyone could think of, the picnickers enjoyed bathing. The little ones had a great time, so people have been swimming in the creek for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The men pitched horseshoes and indulged in a tug of war, which proved exciting and humorous. All reported a most enjoyable time, and the affair will become an annual event in the doings of the American Legion. Charles Tice took a number of pictures at the party. If you are a relative of Charles Tice, or you know where these pictures are, please contact me, lexgrey911@gmail.com. That's LEXGREY. If you have anything of importance or anything that you would like to share in my oral history project, I would be absolutely delighted to hear from you. Another really interesting thing is a map of the creek, a true map of it, did not exist till 1934. In 1933, they began working on making this map just to document all of the promontories, curves, parts mm-hmm. of the creek. And they used these giant high-flying kites to set their instrumentation. So they felt behooved to put an article in the paper paper about it because people were asking what these things were, because it did probably look really wild, and they put markers on rocks and on trees. So there were two big high-flying kites and a giant workboat that made it up the creek. And the paper says Kabbalistic designs on rocks and trees and in other places along the banks of Catskill Creek. Two what appeared to be high-flying kites, one high up on the hill of Summit Avenue and the other over the West Shore Railroad, have caused questions aplenty to be asked in Catskill this past week. The explanations given vary from signals to airplane pilots to indicators of business conditions. Yet the true answer is that they're marks of progress of the work being done in sounding and marking the shoreline of the Catskill Creek and the Hudson River in the vicinity of Catskill by the United States Coast and Geodetic Survey. About a month ago, the first group of men with Lieutenant Gossett in command came to Catskill to start the work. Quarters were leased in a part of the building of the Catskill Metal Works Incorporated, which was the old shale brick plant on the banks of the creek. Now, I'm not sure where that is. Is that by the creek side? Where would the Catskill Metal Works Incorporated be,
Catskill Metal Works, I'm not sure. I know they were...
And they're saying it's the old shale brick plant.
Okay, well, there was one shale brick plant on Lower Main Street, as you're going down towards the point where the townhouses are. That property, because the railroad went, Catskill Mountain Railway went right through there.
Townhouses meaning, you mean down there where that tunnel is.
Yeah, exactly. That tunnel was part of the railroad.
We're not supposed to talk about the secret tunnel running under Catskill.
It's come up on the show before. Yeah.
Like
the first
really?
Show I did was about the railroad. That's how I got into the local history. So that was my first show 3 years ago.
But, yeah, that's a fascinating little area.
And I know there was another brick plant where the Catskill High and Middle School campus are. I think that was called Washburn Brick.
Oh, wow.
That was another brick one. And there may have been one where the creek side is.
And how about the remnant of that brick tower that's by the creek side over there?
That, I think, was called Atlanta Knitting Mill.
Oh, so that was not a brick factory.
I do not believe that was. In fact, that Atlanta Knitting Mill seemed to employ, two people in my family, my grandmother and her sister, who both came over from Italy. One came in 1919, the other one in 1922, and they both worked there.
Now, do you know anything about that mill? I would assume that because it was a mill on the river, that actually the river did power the machinery in there, correct?
That I don't know that for sure, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow. So So there's some secret gems in your family too.
Yes,
yeah,
so that's maybe, I love talking about this.
Always ask questions. Young people of today, you are the historians of tomorrow. So make sure that all of those beautiful questions are answered and all of those stories are told, especially the ones that are not in the history books, because those are the stories I'm most interested in.
Right. And again, as people get older, you want to do it while they are still able to remember these things. If I was doing the show 30 years ago, I could have asked my grandmother stories like this. Maria Casavagola.
right. We're not even that old, and I bet you can't remember what you ate for breakfast.
I'm getting there, Lex. But we won't go into that. I'm in denial about my age. I'm going to be 49 next month, folks. So do the math when I'm going to be in a year, and I am in denial.
You're not an antique yet.
No, good. And I know that one time I did do a show of, but as far as local history, if anybody has a story, I'm going to put this out there for the show too in general. If you grew up in one of the local towns, whether it's Catskill or any place in Greene County, and wanted to tell about what that town was like when you were growing up, that would make a wonderful show. I did that with Harry Vincent 3 years ago. He was a lifelong Catskill resident. And it was one of the early shows I did, maybe my fourth or fifth show. And it went over very well. And there was another person I wish I'd had on, which, of course, he's since passed away. Of course, he was 100 years old. I guess I shouldn't have waited too long. But
Got some great, great stories. I mean, there's always a great story in Catskill. And I'd like to leave you with another kind of funny one. And it's short.
Okay. We have plenty of time.
I know that, there was a point in Catskill where they were talking about making chicken raising and livestock raising illegal, or, you know, mm-hmm. putting some moratoriums on that. And I did look into the local history of the law, and there is a non-livestock law in the village, and I couldn't figure out why. I'm like, you know, there's you know, farriers and blacksmith shops and horse stables, and I couldn't imagine that in a rural village like this that they would frown upon farming and frown upon livestock. And the reason the law was passed is, I don't know if you know this, and I would like more information about this. I'm at the tip of the iceberg on mm-hmm. this, but during, I think it was before the Depression, I'm not sure of the year either, but right where the municipal parking lot is in Catskill, there was kind of this tent city. And mm-hmm. and people were kind of living in tents, and they had their ducks and pigs and chickens and cows and horses oh. with them. And I don't know if this is because there was an unemployment problem or what have you, but it seemed like kind of like a squatter's like village full of okay. livestock. And the, you know, the ladies of the day and their horse-drawn carriages and their high-button shoes were, well, we're stepping in it, if you know what I mean.
I get your drift.
So they started to say, well, you know, we need to keep the main street clean and clear of animal waste, mm-hmm. so you cannot have livestock in the village. And thus the law was passed. So it really wasn't the crowing roosters or, you know, or the mooing cows or the braying donkeys. It was the animal waste on Main Street that were distressing to the wealthy tourists and affecting the tourist trade negatively.
I can see how that would happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to go through a nice town on vacation and
yeah, well, you know, you've seen the size of a cow. A little of that will go a long way.
Yes, yes.
But, yeah, you know, so I just thought that was really interesting. But just the vision of having the you know, the chickens and pigs yeah. running around. I mean, I know where Concadoro is used to be the poultry market. So there were live chickens running around. That was the poultry market. So I think all that's right. also just looking at those gates and that beautiful yes. construction and imagining it just being like resplendent with chickens.
This beautiful restaurant and that addition there with the outside garden. We're a little off track here, but we got time, so I don't mind. Mm-hmm. I need to fill up here. Where the garden eating area is, mm-hmm. that was the original site of Temple Israel.
Really?
Which is now up on Spring Street. There was a fire in 1974. At that time, the La Concadora building was a bakery. Maybe a bakery restaurant. I mean, I was 4 years
wow.
old at this time, so bear with me on this, folks. But there had been a fire there in September of 1974. I've got one picture at home. You can't really see the fire. You can just see looking down the street and the hoses and all that and the trucks. And a little tidbit on that one. I don't know how it started. My grandmother, on my dad's side, lived in Catskill for a couple of years in an apartment on North Street, a wooden apartment building. And the back side of it was fairly close to the back of the La Concadora. And my mother could remember our doorbell ringing about 12:30 in the morning, because Grandma didn't want to stay in that apartment that night for obvious reasons, with a fire that close.
Wow.
And I had another friend who, it was Mavos Roy, actually. Excuse me, a very good friend who passed away last year. And she lived on New Street. So in other words, one block up.
Mayrose, the musician.
Yes.
This
is her mother that
oh,
lived.
Wow.
Well, they both lived next to each other.
Oh, wow.
Her mother passed last year, and Mayrose has moved to Earlton, the daughter. But her mother could tell me that she remembers her husband, Fred, who worked for Green County Buildings and Grounds for many years, actually, going up on the roof of their house and hosing it down because of any flying sparks or anything. Other neighbors on the street were doing the same thing.
Wow.
And kind of a sad touch, she could remember there must have been dogs in the building, in the La Concadora building. And she says you could hear these, they must have been trapped.
Oh, that's horrible.
And you could hear the barks getting more piercing and then stopping.
Oh.
So I know, it's heartbreaking. But back to the garden eating of the Temple Israel. See, I get myself sidetracked easily. I'm a sensibar. And but the temple stood there. It was so close that it was gutted. And it stood boarded up for about 20 years till 1995.
Whoa.
And then It was finally torn down, and the conquistador expanded the garden eating areas where the temple sat.
Oh, okay.
But the fire must have gone right in because there were explosions.
I kind of thought that brick building was very old, so I assumed that that's like where the chickens were.
Well, I mean, I don't know the restaurant building itself, how old that is, you know, a brick building, but the garden area is where the temple sat for 20 years after the fire. Damaged and boarded up, but was never repaired. Because I know that the one on Spring Street was built and opened in 1977. I understand that the local Methodist church, I don't know if that's the one that was on Woodland Avenue, they've changed over the years. Second Baptist is at the head end of Main Street. Might have been a Methodist church at the time. And they let the Jewish congregation they shared their building for a few years until the new temple was built.
Wow. But could you imagine such a great piece of history just sitting there boarded up with all of its stories inside?
It must have been heartbreaking for the Jewish congregation to see that all those years, even though they had a nice, beautiful building on Spring Street, to see your old one boarded up that many years.
All that energy, all those memories, all those great experiences.
One thing is, if you're not going to repair it, tear it down. But 1974 to 1995, that thing stood there.
Well, and you know, there is a lot of uncovered history that still exists here. And there are a lot of abandoned buildings and buildings that are in states of neglect. And it's... all I can do is to reach out to our fellow history buffs and preservationists. Get in there, take pictures, ask questions, uncover stories, uncover start myths and legends. That would be my closing comment. And once again, if you would like to be part of my oral history project, I would be thrilled to talk to you and thrilled to ask you questions and hear your stories and show your mementos. And you can reach me at Lex Gray, LexGrey, 911 at gmail.com. Thank you so much, Jack, for having me today.
Oh,
it was such
pleasure.
A pleasure.
I said, we just discovered that we both have a common interest in local history. We just discovered that by chatting after a show at the Dutchman's Landing a few weeks ago. So, and I think we were talking before we did the recording here, that I think Lex has probably a lot more information on other things too. Maybe, who knows? We may do another show at some point.
I would love that, and I also am especially interested in bootlegging stories. Burlesque stories, anything about the burlesque world. And I know the burlesque shows did make their way right up here to the community theater in Catskill.
Yeah,
Betsy Custer being somebody who used to bring the burlesque shows to upstate New York. And yes, that is General Custer's wife. That's a whole other show.
Yes, here we go. We got it.
So, very interested in that and very, very interested right now in points of interest on the Catskill Creek and any stories that you might have about things that have been there or that are there right now that are of interest.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Lex. I appreciate this, my friend. And this has been wonderful. You've been listening to Backtracks in Time. I'm Jack Sensabaugh with Lex Gray of Catskill, local blues singer and local history buff. So thank you for listening. Have a great day.